the Creative Ambitions Podcast. She's an improviser.
She's a martial artist.
And sometimes she's a hangry. Give it up for your host, the amazing Angela Stanton.
Welcome back, everyone, to part two of my conversation with Jonathan Anderson. Jonathan is a stand-up comedian, improviser, producer, podcaster, sketch writer, and showrunner. He is best known for his stand-up comedy through his show, Show Me Your Bits, and can also be found on his podcast, Mental Break Pod. During the second half of our conversation, we start off with the same way we ended. We talk about how funny Madeline is, mental health, confidence and authenticity when it comes to comedy, how he used to watch comedy and sneak around as a kid, being more authentic on stage, comedic influences that he had growing up, different takes on comedy that he liked versus what he'd seen in the Boston area, his love for Whose Line, a set that him and Maddie did at the Union Improv Festival, his growth in his stand-up career, and then we wrap it up with some gratitude. I'm actually not going to hold you guys here too long. I am excited for the second part of this episode. I appreciate all of you coming back for part two. This was such a treat having Jonathan on, so yeah, I'm excited. Thank you all so much for tuning in, and here is the second part of my conversation with Jonathan Anderson. Madeline, I find to be like the most professional
member. She is. She's also like worked corporate jobs, so she has like a strong sense of like, we should treat this like a job, yeah, and like, you know, meet every deadline. I'm much less like that.
Yeah.
I have some senses of that when it's like my project. I can be very like, this is a business about Psyched Out or Show Me Your Bits.
Yeah.
But if I'm just like a cast member, I don't have it as much as Maddie does with like, she's so regimented too.
She's great. I wish I talked to her more, but I think if anything, like, I naturally always bring up the show Gilmore Girls with her, and we've already talked about Gilmore Girls like 3 to 7 times. It's like every time I would see her, especially when I first started working as a manager, I'd be like, so, you know, I'm not really a big fan of Lorelai anymore. And she's like, what? And then I caught myself just like naturally bringing that up to her every time. And I was like, I need something better to talk about than just the show that came out.
I probably talked about Gilmore Girls with her less times than that.
Yes.
So you're really saving me there.
Really pushing it.
Yeah. Yeah, she does love Gilmore Girls. And she does kind of recap the drama to me, but I just have no idea what's going on. I also just don't understand why the daughter's delivery is that way. Like, it's like she's just barely opening her mouth the whole time.
I know. I think it's supposed to show a good girl come out of a bad but good girl situation.
Sure. It seems spectrum-y.
Yep.
Can you say that?
Yep.
It's a little spectrum-y.
And kudos to those that are on it.
On the spectrum.
Because they're smart.
Shout out to all of our autistic fans.
I think I'm one of them.
I think I'm on the, yeah. I really am kind of on the spectrum.
I really do. Sometimes I can't make eye contact with people because I haven't slept.
Oh, terrible. Oh, slept?
Yeah. I'm like, guys, I'm really insecure. Because
I really can't make eye contact with people until I've been friends with them for roughly a year.
I just won't talk to them.
Yeah, that makes it easier.
I'll just act like I'll give you a smile, but then kind of like what you just did, like I'll just look down. I'll be like.
Yeah, yeah.
I also have a really bad habit of engaging in conversations, but looking past somebody. Like, I'll be talking to you, and all of a sudden I'll just start looking at the door because I'm like, you know, something might blow by there, but it's also easier to stare at. And so many times I will do that, and people will look in the direction that I'm looking, and I'm like, no, I'm just watching the thought. There's nobody there.
Yeah, I can't remember who was making fun of me about this, but their impression of me was like me talking to them, but like looking around the room as if I'm looking for a better conversation to jump into. But it's really just like I'm overstimulated right now.
I'm just trying to catch the thought. Where did it go?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I do the same thing, but it comes out a lot when like I'm tired or if like something else is going on in my day-to-day, like I have a really hard time not showing it like facially. People will be like, are you okay? And I'm like,
yeah.
And like I'll be fine, but I'll answer and I'll be like, yeah, why? Like
get the fuck off my back.
Yeah, V's with the eyebrows and whatnot, but
yeah, yeah. I work sometimes, yeah, like when I'm tired, I think I have resting upset face or something. Because I worried about that with, like, when we would have rehearsals on Tuesdays.
Yeah.
I would be, like, so tired from work and, like, then just doing improv. And I don't have the same, like, level of adrenaline. Like, I need, like, a little bit of stakes to, like, be energetic in my improv scenes. In rehearsals, I'm a little bit more. I always just thought, like, people probably think I hate them or hate the structure we're doing or hate Kelly Moon, whoever our director was.
I was on, I think it was my second run of house teams with you, third run of house teams in general. I started getting so fucking heated about not jumping in on a scene when I had a thought.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm somebody that, like, still to this day, I try to give everybody space, especially when they're confident about it. There were too many times where I would be, like, almost halfway out on a stage. Somebody else would come in. And you could just see not only my face drop, but, like, my shoulders drop. And I would just get so aggravated. I'd be like... and I would turn around. I would go... I'd be in back corner in the dark, just pissed at myself.
I don't think I
out.
Really noticed. Except maybe... Maybe if you did, I thought you were maybe doing a bit of, like... like that kind of thing.
I probably brought up my persona in some of the scenes, yeah. But I totally get that. Just, like, having that frustration.
Yeah, I mean... Did you think I was pissed ever?
No. If anything, okay. I'm just bringing up the correlation as to what, like, I empathize with that a lot.
Yeah, like, or how you're perceived. I think it's just, like, other people aren't really clocking with, everyone's just kind of dealing with their stuff. I would just be at rehearsal thinking about what happened at work.
Yeah.
A lot of times, and then trying to understand whatever structure we were doing.
Usually with house teams, like, during that time, I was thinking about how terrible I was and how I wasn't going to get casted again. Yeah.
Yeah.
Some self-worth issues going on.
Yeah. That's hard to think of mid-scene when you're supposed to be a barber.
But usually when I have, like, aggravating moments like that, and again, these are, like, all personal for me. It has nothing to do with anybody that I'm trying to build a scene with or yes-anding. Mm-hmm. It's really just me trying to find as much comfort in myself as possible to make sure everybody else is looking good.
Yeah, I mean, it takes, there's, you can do good improv for a long time and still not be doing necessarily your best stuff.
Yeah.
Or like, I like early into improv, it was like, I kind of had to plan ahead of, like, where the scene's going before I would kind of do the edit.
Yeah.
And that's not, and when it would work really well to have, like, something in a goal in the back of your mind to, like, the story should go this way.
Yeah.
And, but the problem with that is if you're thinking that way and then your scene partner, who's also has all these thoughts, does something a little different, you're going to still be thinking of your way to do things. So, and then it just, like, then the scene sucks because it's just two people, like, not agreeing with each other.
Yeah.
And it's just better to, like, not. So that, like, I was doing good improv, seemingly good improv for a while, but still not feeling like, I still feel like, why did that feel weird?
Yeah.
It felt like you're kissing someone, but that just, like, we all know how kissing should work, but why was that?
Why, yeah, like, why are you eating my chin?
Right. Yeah. And that was a scene I had with Chris Morin where he made out with my chin.
Yeah, I get that.
Yeah. And I was like, why does this feel like we're not doing our best improv?
Does this feel like trash? Yeah, I get that.
I started dating Maddie, and I think that helped a lot with, I mean, just being on house teams helped a lot with confidence, helped a lot with, like, then I, you know, all of a sudden I have friends again, and, like,
I have friends.
Yeah, which is nice.
Which is really helpful for my mental health as well.
Yeah, and also,
therapist.
Maddie is, like, truly the funniest person on earth.
Fuck yeah.
And I think just her being, like, say, like, thinking I'm really funny was just, like, such a confidence boost to have, like, someone I respected that much respect me. I was, like, and also, like, just getting to pitch stand-up jokes to her and her laughing, it would make me go, like, okay, I have to try this joke. Because even if it was, like, offensive or risky or something like that, it would be funny. If it bombed, then I could tell Maddie about it. Like, oh, you know that joke you love? They hated when I said the R word. Something like that.
Yeah, I'm, like, getting goosebumps because that's kind of beautiful. You found somebody that, like, essentially sees you.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what it's like. It kind of felt like, dating before her, too, also just kind of felt like okay, I can be 75% of myself with this person. That's pretty good. Like, that's, and I think a lot of marriages are like that. It's like, I just have to work on the 15%.
Yeah.
Or just hide that 15% and only have that percent with my buddies or like, my internet browser, whatever.
And
the
other 10%, like, I'm just going to die with.
Yeah. But with Maddie, I feel like we are truly ourselves together. And that, like, knowing that helps you be your authentic self in other ways, too. Because you're just like, if this person I respect loves my authentic self, then I can be my authentic self on stage. And that's good. You know?
Like, whatever happens, happens.
Yeah. And yeah, it's just like, I don't know.
I'm actually crying.
Are you?
No.
Okay. I don't see any tears.
I do have like goosebumps. That is, that's just like really beautiful.
Yeah. I think my.
Cool.
Yeah.
this is not my favorite part of the podcast. Yes.
I liked when the compliments were less personal.
Yeah. But I'm going to look at the floor now.
Yeah. We're just both looking around the room.
Yeah. I know. I'm like, oh, you fucking autistic shit, Angela.
Both. We can't be autistic at the same time. But yeah, it is beautiful. It just felt weird. I was going to say thank you, but it was like, I don't know. It's just like it felt weird to be like, yeah, it is. I love my girlfriend and thank you.
I love your girlfriend in a non. And I made it weird again.
No, if you loved her in a romantic way, I wouldn't even care.
Who knows?
Yeah.
But.
I'm Henrietta, the amazing hypnotherapist. Ooh. Now look into my pocket watch. Watch it go back and forth, back and forth. Yes, you are getting very sleepy. You are dreaming now. You see yourself on a stage. Yes, a stage. Everyone is laughing at you. Oh, no. But they are laughing for all the wrong reasons. They are yelling, look at that 5'8" man with a 4-inch penis. Yes, your penis is out, and you have peed all over the stage. You see your reflection in the pee puddle, and it is also laughing at you. When I snap my fingers, you will wake up and your chronic stage fright will be cured. Ready? Good. Now that'll be $5,000.
I think that's really cool. Just kind of hearing, you know, like where you came from and... It seems like where you came from, I feel like your background was just like something that you kind of still hold in a sense where you're like I'm never going back. But also like.
I mean, yeah, it informs everything. I mean, your childhood is like shapes who you are.
I love that you said that, but there's like something. Keep going.
You know, no. You had something more profound in mind and I want you to.
I just think, like, there's too many thoughts. I'm sorry. This is my ADD when it gets a little too quick. I find that some of the best people have some of the worst stories. And I'm not saying you have, like, the worst story, but...
I'm more thrown off by being the best people, but...
Yeah. But, like, you came from a place where you essentially, like, you just weren't... You were, like, existing. You weren't even living. You were just surviving.
Yeah.
And just then
doing what everyone told you to do.
Yeah.
And like speaking of like we're talking about being your authentic self with someone, like I was being about 10% of myself maybe at that time. And then it's just like the percentage has gone up over the years. Yeah. And now I think like I don't want to say I'm 100% authentic because that just sounds like, I mean... That sounds like something Ice Spice would say.
I'm cagey. I get that.
Yeah, and there's just something like, yeah, I mean, if someone asks if I like their shirt, I might lie. And yeah. Be like, because I did go through a phase where it's like, I'm going to be 100% authentic. And then I was just like kind of mean, you know? And it, there's like that Buddhist saying that's honesty without compassion is just brutality.
Yeah.
So I will lie sometimes. But yeah. I think I, for the most part, really when it comes to comedy, I and interpersonal relationships and comedy relationships, I am prepared to deal with any ramifications for being my authentic self. And yeah. Some people don't like it. Straight up don't like it, but
I've always liked that. I've always loved the confidence that you've had in like your stand up, your yes ands. I think when it comes to comedy, like comedy is supposed to be like, you know, a realm of like entertainment that does push people's buttons
mm-hmm.
to a certain extent. Like there always has to be some truth with what is being said. And that's usually where most of the laughs come from because, you know, whatever context that person might be yes anding, like, as long as they're confident about what they're saying, as long as they're, like, bringing in some context of the experience that they had, like, those get huge laughs because people also went through that.
Yeah. I mean, when I was a Christian, I would sneak watch a lot of comedy, and I think that pushed a lot of, like, even it, when we were in, like, a very homophobic thing, and then you'd see, like, it could be a stand-up bit about why it's stupid to hate gay people, and that would, like, reshape how I thought of it.
Yeah.
I don't know why I used that example specifically, but that felt like...
Is it because of my suit?
Yes.
Fucking love this outfit.
I just looked you up and down. I was like, yeah, something, you know, like gay people, right?
It's queer.
Yeah, that's all that can come to mind.
That is actually something that I've come to terms with lately.
Oh, is this the episode where we come out?
This is the one. My family doesn't listen to this, so who cares? Yeah, I've kind of known since I was in, I have known that I've at least been interested in the same sex since second year of college, and then there was like 2 or 3 years of just some really bad stuff. But since I've been at the theater, I'm like, what the fuck? I don't care.
Yeah.
I don't. Nobody else cares. Yeah. Like, everybody already knows.
Improv Asylum is so gay. It's like just.
So queer.
Yeah, I didn't think I was queer till I went to Improv Asylum.
Yes.
And now I don't know.
I was like, I want to.
Sometimes I wear women's sunglasses.
Yeah.
What's that mean?
Sometimes I wear men's socks.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the.
God bless.
The heel is never in the right spot, but.
No.
I like a good little cushion.
Yeah, that's beautiful.
It's so stupid.
Well, so when did you come to terms with like, okay, I definitely gotta come out?
Well, there was a few things that were going on. I don't know. Like I had a great summer in terms of like just
That's just such a funny setup to like. I must be gay because I had a great.
I had a great summer. I was. Fucking ever. No. No, I had a great summer in terms of, like, I wasn't dating anybody, but I kind of just started to realize more and more, like, how proud of myself I was. And I was hanging out with people from Late to the Party TV, and I love, like, Jared Todd, Little John, Kelly Moon, Sam Carty, mm-hmm. Alex Tomorrow, and Brian Kearney to... So, to a high extent, when it comes to, like, them as people and the professional moves that they're making in the just, like, overall, like, creative world.
Yeah.
That is, like, it's just something that I'm very influenced by because it's, I think, just something that I want to work on and it's something that I can see myself doing. And, I mean, even apart from, like, all of the bits and talent that these people have, they are just, like, so down to earth, so genuine. And I think... After, like, hanging out with them and hanging out with, like, some other friends that I've reconnected with so many people from high school. A lot of people just, like, assumed already that I was.
Sure. I kind of did. But yeah. I didn't. I guess we never talked about it.
Like, I knew that, like, I was, but I wasn't, like, telling people. If anything, I, like, only feel comfortable telling, like, theater people. But, or, like, people that I'm around that, like, already have accepted me.
Yeah.
For the things that I don't have to talk about. It was, if anything, like, I just had, like, a lot of beautiful things that were happening to me, like, socially, personally, professionally. Like, I had just started the podcast, and I was like, I'm so cool. Like, who does this for no money?
Because,
like, they're so, Like, I don't know. I was really just, like, proud of myself. And
yeah, it's sort of what we were talking about. Like, you just...
How did I come to the realization?
Well, yeah, I was just wanted to, like, piggyback on what we were saying about, like, you've just been, like, more comfortable being your true self.
Yeah.
And, like, once you have all these people that, like, accept you for who you are, you're like, why am I hiding this part from them? It feels silly.
Yeah. Like, I've noticed in the queer world, there's this thing that, like, when you come out, you kind of, like, essentially go through a second adolescence. Mm. There's a lot of, like, labeling and trying to figure out things that you do and do not like. And I sound so immature even just talking about
this, but it's great.
It's adolescence number two. I've noticed that, like, as I'm stepping into, like, this part of myself, there are some things that have been coming up that I sound, like, really immature about. Hmm. Just some of the way that, like, I'll describe people, like, I don't know. I made some dumb joke the other day where I was like, nobody can sit here if they're fucking fat. And, like, I don't.
I did not see that coming.
No, and, like, I don't know why, but I was like, I was, like, really immature. Like, why am I even saying that? And then I kind of, like, I, like, sat with it for a little bit, and I was like, you are labeling everything right now, and you just need to fucking chill. Like,
yeah, yeah.
It's, it's been a really weird experience. It has, like, its up and downs in terms of just, like, self-acceptance, but.
Right. You're just probably unpacking a lot. Are your parents conservative? Like, would they be upset?
I was raised Catholic, and,
You.
Yeah,
it's like they
should
think
probably have a conversation with them now that we're chatting.
Just
about
play this podcast.
Yeah, but I know they have love for me, but the way that they show their love is through fear.
Yeah, that is a Massachusetts. Are you from Massachusetts?
My parents are. So, like, yeah. I technically, in a very brief, broad sense, like, I sort of grew up in Melrose. Mm-hmm. A lot of family in Melrose, but I live in Salem, New Hampshire.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's
weird because, like, my parents, well, one, if I did come out or something, they would not be supportive just because it's like, it's a sin to them if they even support it and I know, like, they won't come to any of my comedy shows. Like, I've been doing comedy 6 years and they've never been to a show.
They went to my grad show, which was great.
That's
I
nice.
Had 40 people show up for my grad show.
Wow.
Yeah. People want to see me be gay.
They want it. Yeah.
They're like, put on that blazer.
Yeah.
Something that I do want to bring up. This is kind of going back into, like, your childhood. You were essentially, like, isolated in a Christian community that, you know, growing up, you probably didn't know that that was your fit. Mm-hmm. You said you used to watch a lot of comedy.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of, finding stand-up on YouTube, usually.
You had, I'm sure, like, influences.
Yeah, I...
Who influenced you to, like, essentially have this push in your career? Maybe multiple?
When I was a little kid, my parents were okay with comedy that was older because it wasn't as, like, in their mind as edgy. It was edgy in different ways.
Yeah.
Like, you know, like, the Dean Martin roasts? I don't know if you've heard of those.
I have.
But it's sort of like they don't say fuck or shit or like something like that. But they
you
will
can't swear on here.
I was gonna say we are in trouble then.
Literally sworn before.
Yeah.
You did.
they would be like racist jokes or something or like sexist jokes. I was too young to understand them, but they had like no swearing kind of things. So someone I love watching growing up was Jerry Lewis. Are you familiar with him?
Yeah.
Like the Nutty Professor, Cinderfella. He had a bunch of movies. But I would watch him as like a little kid and imitate him and like put on shows for my family as like doing a lot of physical comedy and doing his trying to imitate his voice.
Okay.
And I'm trying to think of what comedians when I was a kid. It was a lot of older comedians, but I think when I was a teenager and my brother started showing me a lot of stuff because he's older than me.
Yeah.
And he had left Christianity.
Okay.
So he would show me a lot of horror movies and comedies. I think he showed me Borat and stuff like that.
I like refuse to watch Borat.
Oh, it's At the time, I don't know how it would hold up, but at the time, one of the funniest things I'd ever seen.
I had an ex-boyfriend who, in hindsight, I just realized now that I never really loved, but I got a, it was like for my birthday one year, he gave me Borat as a present, and I was like, it's not going to work out. Like, ever.
That's a present.
Yeah.
I think you a DVD?
Yeah, I think I still have the DVD.
Wow.
I was so
what a romantic.
Yeah, I was so fucking aggravated.
Like, will you be my wife?
I was like, we're 10. Like, we are 10 years old.
Oh, you were 10.
No, but, like, we were so young that I didn't find, I, like, don't know how to word this. I basically was just, like, at an age where I noticed how horny boys were, and I was like, I don't feel that for you. So
yeah. Well, I think guys are just used to or assume that the girls aren't as horny as them. So he's probably just like, well, this Borat DVD will get her going.
Yeah. Let's fucking hold hands or something in the truck. And I'm like, no. Yeah. So I like don't. I'm like, yeah, I'm totally still holding on to that. I don't watch Borat because of that. I have
I then never watch it. I think Stand Your Ground.
Yeah, I'm like,
I don't know if it was a huge influence. I guess I do stand the drunk sports fan now, so that's like a, you know, fucking with real people kind of thing.
I do love that.
But in high school is when I really got more into stand-up, and I would watch a lot of George Carlin.
Okay.
And that was, he did a lot of stuff about religion, so that was like kind of changing my brain chemistry a little bit.
Yeah.
I got into, I feel like I was one of, in my mind, one of the first people to find John Mulaney.
Yes.
And was just like, so I would tell everyone about him. And I just thought his writing was so succinct. And a lot of stand-up I saw was like kind of tough guys or like braggadocious, like Boston comics. Yeah, or just like, duh, you know, like make it, or like Andrew Dice Clay. Like
okay.
A lot of like, my wife's a dumb bitch, you know, that kind of energy. And it was funny to hear that when I saw John Mulaney and like, Pete Holmes, comedians that were like a little bit more, had a worldview similar to mine. That's when I sort of was like, oh, I guess I could do stand-up. Like, I couldn't do the whole, like, bro-y stand-up, but I could do something different. I liked Anthony Jeselnik a lot.
Okay.
Some Mitch Hedberg.
I know Jeselnik. Yeah.
What dark one-liners? Which...
Yes, he's got some famous stand-up stuff. Yeah. I really loved John Mulaney when I was getting into stand-up, which was, I don't watch a lot of stand-up. I'm not gonna lie, but his first, yeah. I think Netflix special was.
Yeah, I don't watch a lot of stand-up now because it's just like I do it all the time that it kind of makes me
cringy.
Feel ill or like. Oh, there goes a bit. I can't, like, that area's covered.
Well, it could also be like, I need something else in my life.
Yeah, I need to watch. I watch a lot of, like, please, dark dramas and horror movies.
Oh, okay.
To, like, probably balance out my life a little bit.
Hi, I'm John Mulaney. And I can confirm that Jonathan is the first person to discover me. You see, we met in a place called Brookside Terrace. I was one of his cool drug dealer friends. I'm glad to hear he is doing well and has a girlfriend. You know, like a woman partner.
But yeah, so influences, I think that... Kelly Dooley. Improv, I loved Whose Line, but I also thought it was so good that I was like, I couldn't do that.
Whose Line was really good. I wish I watched it more when it was out, but every time it was on, I was like, this is very funny.
Yeah, watching it now, it's just short form in general, once you've done improv for a while, I think just, like, feels very unsatisfying.
Yeah.
I kind of just wish they would go on, like, a long-form tour or something like this. Do a montage. I'd watch that.
Yeah, like Middle Ditch and Schwartz.
Yeah. That's kind of, like, I think, my improv North Star a little bit, where I'm like, I would love to do... Me and Maddie just did a two-prov set at the Union Improv Festival, and it was... I don't want to toot my own horn, but kind of a big hit, because we just vibe so well together, and... do offensive things together. So,
which is really cool. I think it shows the kind of characters, like, not the characters that you might play on stage, but it shows your personal characters, mm-hmm. like the strength of who you guys are, in a sense. That was so corny to say.
No,
that
beautiful.
You can work together in a comedic sense and still date.
Yeah. I think I was playing a horrible person, but yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I love that.
What have we not covered?
You do I Don't Care for This Comedy, which is like a show-based sense.
Was it?
It's like a show that you put on.
It's like I Don't Care for This is just sort of the umbrella we put all our sketches under, and like our every show we produce, like Show Me Your Bits and Psyched Out and Deep Shit and all those.
When it comes to that page, like, are you essentially the one producer, or are there other people producing it?
It's
with you?
Typically me and Chris Morin, and Maddie's pretty involved. But it's also like Zach does a lot of sketches with Zach Tatakis.
Yeah, he's awesome. Shout out to
yeah,
him.
He's hilarious. Yeah, I mean, there's people who are involved in the shows, but as far as like a lot of the production stuff, it's mostly me and Chris.
Okay. And stuff that falls under I Don't Care for This Comedy or this umbrella of, like, sketches or shows that you guys put up. We have the Psyched Out show and Show Me Your Bits. How did you get started with the Show Me Your Bits stand-up?
Well, Improv Asylum had Lit Night and Type 5,
yeah.
And I would just sign up for those to, like, kind of get back into stand-up. Usually my stand-up bits were, like, I would do 4 minutes of stand-up, and then the last minute was something, like, would get fucked up. Like, I had Chris Morin play my dad, who would interrupt my set, and, like, we would heal or whatever until I told my darkest joke, and then he'd leave. Or I had a joke where there was, like, a time travel bit where Chris was me in the future, and then Mike Kelly was me in the even the more distant future.
Okay.
There was just, like, I would do weird bits like that, but the whole goal was to get to that weird bit. But I enjoyed the first 4 minutes so much that I got back into stand-up and doing it, like, every day. And then I was doing it every day for a while, or maybe not every day. I was doing it every couple days, but more focused on improv. And then when I got rejected from NXT, which I think was, like, the third or fourth time I got rejected, I was like, I think I'm at my ceiling with Improv Asylum, so I'm going to focus. And I was already on Union Comedy at the time with Clyde.
Shout out Union.
So it's just kind of like, and I would do The Pickle, which is their, like, all-star show. So I was, like, kind of at the ceiling there, and Maddie had just gone to NXT, so I was like, I'm going to be in Boston for a while. It's not like I can just move. So I got to really get good at stand-up. So after I got rejected from NXT, I booked a stand-up show at the Arts at the Armory, and I figured that having that show will motivate me to, like, get my stand-up act together by that date. And then I've just kind of loved it ever since, and Show Me Your Bits is, like, probably the most fun I have in comedy right now.
Yeah.
We just did our first one at the Rockwell Theater, which was really fun.
Was that the festival?
Yeah, it was, like, the finale of the festival.
Okay. So when it comes to, like, is it an improv festival?
Yeah. Yeah, it was, we were the only, like, stand-up show.
What's an improv festival like?
Well, they vary.
Is it kind of like, so with a Type 5, you can do 5 minutes of stand-up, 5 minutes of improv. Is it kind of like that in a way where certain teams get asked to perform that?
Yeah, it'd be like you submit your indie team. You pay like a fee, and I think you get it back usually if you get accepted. And then they give you like a block, like, okay, you're performing at 8 for 25 minutes during this festival. Some festivals, like the Portland, Maine Comedy Festival, it's like all day, every day for a weekend, I think. So you might have a show at 1 p.m. Like we had a show at 11 on Saturday and then 4 p.m. on a Sunday.
Okay.
Psyched Out did. This Union Improv Festival was awesome because it was like every night from 7 to 11. And so your window was pretty good, and it was at the Rockwell Theater, which gets a lot of people off the street. So that's like a great festival to, like, no matter what, I'm getting a pretty good prime time slot.
Yeah.
Show Me Your Bits was at 11:30, which is not like ideal, but it's still like fun. It's like it kind of fits into like a raunch vibe,
yeah.
You know, where raunch is the late show. But yeah, I think I'm trying to think. We did the Edinburgh Improv Festival, which was also great.
I was going
to
bring that up.
Yeah,
Edinburgh, Scotland.
Yes,
everybody,
that's
Scotland.
The one. That one was great too. It was that one's a little bit more higher profile. So I think it's just kind of like whatever festival. It kind of depends on who's doing it, how long it's been running, what the venue. It's not like, oh, festivals suck. Oh, you know, you just might, if when you first do festivals, you might get like shitty slots. But it's more just like connected. Like a lot of people go to them. So like somebody saw our show from like CCTV at the, so they want to film a set of ours now.
Nice.
And somebody from New York watched Show Me Your Bits and they offered me a slot to do a theater in New York City. That sort of thing is what can come from a festival. I think more often than not, it's kind of like you just make friends you wouldn't have otherwise met. Got to meet Will Hines in Edinburgh, which he's the guy who wrote that book, How to Be the Greatest Improviser on Earth,
okay.
Which I recommend.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Have you ever done a festival?
No, but I, like, the more that I chat with just people that I've been interviewing, festival has gotten brought up. I think this might be like the second or third time. I think Kelly Moon was talking about how she got asked to do some like festivals of some sort for acting. And I'm always just like I am still kind of coming into the theater world in a sense. So certain shows, like when people say festivals, I'm like, what is that? Like, are people like putting fire in their mouth, like improvising that? Like, what is that?
No, it's not like,
is it a circus?
Festival is just sort of like, it's basically means a telethon. It's just going to be like improv all day, every day for a while.
It sounds like house teams, but
yeah,
way more on steroids.
And you might get like the Union one had like teams from New York, teams from Chicago, teams from Rhode Island. It's just, it's kind of like a community thing.
Kind of like bringing
Yeah, builds community. You get to see a lot of teams you wouldn't normally see.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense. So you've done the Show Me Your Bits, which is like essentially just all stand up and some improvised.
It's like so the premise is someone does a stand up set, I do a stand up set, and then the audience can ask me questions about my bits afterwards. Or a stand up will do a set, and then I go up and ask them questions about their set afterwards, and then we open it up to the audience to ask them questions. So it's like a little bit of a, it's definitely for comedy nerds,
because
it's like you get to, it's like if you want to get to know a stand-up a little better or ask them about how they came to that bit. A lot of times it's just sort of like if they have a bit about God, a lot of times the audience will be like, so do you believe in God? You know, something like they want to know. Like the Show Me Your Bits we did this past Saturday night, the question we kept getting asked was like, are you okay with your parents? Which started because I had talked about being raised Pentecostal and them being Trump supporters. So,
my body cringed.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, my body's been cringing since Election Day. But
yep.
So, yeah.
Sick!
Yeah. Anyways, this is
future
fun.
Miracle! Yeah. Okay, so it sounds like the show is... it's not really like Next on Deck where you're taking all of the stand-up bits and making like a montage of it.
No, there's no improv. There's only some improvised stand-up, I guess, when you're answering the questions. But there's no improv.
I'm so sorry, but it has like I wish I had a different name, but it's almost like Matt Rife giving jokes and then he's like, let's talk. Let's talk about this.
Oh,
you're in a wheelchair.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We make fun of any wheelchair bound people in the audience.
Future of America.
Gotta win over that side of the country, but it's fun and it's a lot of characters too. So like I have a lot of improv people come and like Bill Fryer's done like a million characters for that show.
Yeah, I do see him on the Instagram posts every so often.
Yeah, and like people can do like weirder stuff, like somebody last time it was Bailey Hall was teaching Christine Cuddy to carve a pumpkin under pressure for the Halloween show. So it's just like it can be as weird, and as we had Mike Giordano from Clyde play RFK Jr. this past Saturday, and he drank raw milk on stage and ate soil.
Oh
yeah, so you know, I get to ask them follow-up questions. You can ask them follow-up questions after they drink the raw milk.
I've been meaning to go to these shows, so I'm excited for that.
Oh, the next one is December 20th if someone's listening to this and wants to come.
I'm going to write it down. So, love this. Love this. We've been cooking. We've been... Yeah. I feel like
we've covered it all, mostly.
We have. I think if anything, like, I'll just ask like a couple more questions and then I'll get you out of here. What's your favorite thing to do right now for comedy? Like, what is something that you don't even have to look forward to it every day that you might do it, but what is something that consistently, like, seems to be filling your cup in your career with all of these, you know, different avenues that you've taken?
I think it most of the time it's stand-up. Okay. And that's but that's usually when it goes really well. I think a stand-up set going great is more satisfying than an improv set going great, for at least right now, for whatever reason.
Maybe it's because it's like more individualized.
Yeah, it's just kind of like that was all on me. And that's the downside too of it when it doesn't go well. It's like, well, that was all me. So
do I even belong here?
Yeah. Yeah. Improv, psyched out is probably like the most fun improv thing I do. I mean, I have a lot of fun with Clyde too, but psyched out is like an hour, and it's like with all some like my closest friends in improv.
Just before we get a little bit more in depth, Psyched Out is a all improvised show where a psychic medium usually pulls questions or an audience member, and they get stories about some super it's paranormal.
Like they do a lot. Karen Kelly does a live reading, and then we do improv based on that person's life, and it's like long form too. So it's like not, we're just, you know, dinging a bell or
totally.
Something.
So go check it out. But yeah, you enjoy doing
that. Was the fun stand up is kind of where I'm like having the where I'm the most determined right now. And I also want to, you know, I do some sketch stuff, but I want to start doing some more directing and writing some more short films.
Oh,
yeah, which I've done in the past, but I've taken like a while off to focus on stand up. So yeah. I think right now it's
sick.
Yeah. I think it's kind of just like, I don't know if people are listening to this for advice, but I think I want to say it was like Pete Holmes who said on his podcast that you should like follow the dream that's also following you. So it's kind of like wherever you're getting opportunities, you should follow that. And right now, stand up is where I keep getting offered things. And, you know, the improv things I have going are good too.
Yeah.
But improv, it's hard to make money. Like, you have to, it is sort of just a stepping stone a lot of the time.
Yeah, it's
so
a seed.
So, stand-up you can actually, you know, have a career with.
Eventually.
Yes, yeah, after about 10 years of suffering.
And bleeding.
Yeah, so I'm just following that right now. And then, I kind of just want to do everything, though.
Fucking sick. Yeah. I love that.
Yeah.
Well, I definitely think you have the talent and the mindset to do it. So I'm looking forward to I'm looking forward to seeing everything with you and, you know, the shows that you have going on, some of the casts that you've been working with. I mean, it's really great having this space, but it's also great seeing what other people are doing with this community from this space. Does
right.
that make sense?
Yeah, like just you mean like branching out?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think I didn't really have a choice but to branch out. It was kind of like not up to me.
Whether it's forced or by thought.
Yeah, yeah. But I think it is an important thing to like, don't just put all your hopes and dreams into one comedy club, whatever the comedy club is, because it's just, you know, then if you're reliant on them for stage time, then you'll just, it'll kind of mar your judgment and your, how do I want to say this?
I don't know. Kind of, it's like, if you guys want milk and cookies, don't hold the milk or the cookie in the milk too long because it's going to crumble.
Sure. Or don't.
I think
or
I'm
don't,
hungry.
Maybe this analogy. Maybe don't only go to one grocery store because that grocery store might stop selling you milk and cookies.
Yeah.
And then, or that grocery store.
Doesn't have them.
Yeah, it doesn't have them. And it just, it's the stage time is the most important thing. So, like, just go where you can get stage time and have fun.
Sick. I love that.
And may I say one thing about Improv Asylum?
I'm waiting.
What if they just bleep all the rest of this out?
Yeah, and it's just, and like, everyone wait, like, I'm the one editing.
Yeah, wait, what did he say? Yeah, everyone would be like, what the fuck did he say?
And thanks for coming on, Jonathan.
Yeah, no, all right, let me get this out. As whatever, like, you know, joking about, like, Improv Asylum rejecting me, it, at the end of the day, like, Improv Asylum has helped me out in so many ways as far as, like, getting stage time, building confidence. I met my girlfriend there, which has changed my life. All my best friends are from Improv Asylum. I mean, Dan, Henry, Rosemary, Chris. Libby, Chris, Kelly Moon, Emma, Athena. Like, I could take an hour or two to name all the friends I've made from Improv Asylum and all that I would consider, like, my best friends. Yeah. So asking for anything more is a little greedy. And if I have to make my bones elsewhere, then that's not that hard an ask.
Yeah.
You know?
I feel you.
That being said, I'll be performing at Union Comedy this Saturday at 7:30 if anyone wants to come.
Doing some open mic nights tonight.
Show Me Your Business December 20th. Psyched Out is this Thursday. I don't know if this will come out in time, but
probably not this week, but if anything, I'll post something at least on Instagram for it.
Yeah. And then just follow I Don't Care for This. That's where we have like a few Psyched Out dates left before Christmas, and then I'm doing a bunch of stand up, so
I'm excited to do this because I've never taken a photo while recording.
Can I put sunglasses on to make it look like I'm cool?
That'd be sick. That'd be sick. You kind of like don't look like you. Sick. Okay,
serious.
So look out for the Instagram post on that. But
I look great in it.
Dude, you kind of look like somebody that works at the theater right now from afar.
Oh, who?
Tom Breck.
Tom Breck? That sounds like a made-up name.
I'm pretty sure his last name's Brett.
Show me a picture of him.
Just came back to the theater. Used to work there years and years ago. And now this motherfucker.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, from afar, I'm like, you look like Tom.
We've interacted very little, but
yeah,
I like that guy.
He's a nice guy. Very sarcastic. Totally should perform improv comedy. But
every usher should.
Every usher should. I think it's kind of crazy when they don't, but only because... Yeah. Like, for me personally, like, I shouldn't say that, but for me personally, I'm like, why wouldn't you utilize everything you can?
Like, I mean, also just, like, why not try it? Maybe you'll be good. And then the worst that happens is if you suck, then only a level one people saw you, and they also probably sucked.
Yeah,
so.
And they didn't come back for a reason.
Yeah. Is this a two-parter? Like,
it's going to be a two-parter.
I think it has
we
to be a
like
two-parter.
Like an hour and 40 minutes. But
I hope people are interested in some of this, and... you know, hopefully someone will be listening who were in my Christian cult and they'll understand me a little better.
I'm sure that we're going to get some Christians on here that will try to, you know, recenter me back to God.
Right.
But
you should have a Christian on. You should have my dad on next for like a rebuttal.
Yeah,
it's only fair.
I just want you all to know that there are multiple species that are homosexual, not just humans.
Yeah.
It's been going on for a while.
And sometimes I wear women's sunglasses, and other species wear women's sunglasses, and it's fine.
Sometimes I wear men's socks. Gotta get that feet room. So awkward. All right,
well. That's the perfect way to end.
Is there anything you want to add before we do jump off, though?
I feel like I've said everything I could. I feel like after this podcast, I'll never have to do a podcast again, because if someone has a question for me, I'll be like, just go to listen to Angela's podcast.
You'll get everything there.
I've said all the words I know.
She added some shit and lost her train of thought.
Yeah.
But
I came out as autistic.
Yeah, I've got the tism.
Yeah.
People say spurgy. I'm like, no, tism.
In the description, you should just say, Jonathan and Angela come out, and then let people click on it and figure out what we mean.
Well, it's been such a joy having you on. I'm gonna definitely save all the gush for the outro, just so it's not as autistically
weird. Yeah, so
weird.
We can make eye contact.
Yeah, you know, walk out of here without shame.
Yeah. Well, there's no doing that. But
no, it's improv. It's embarrassing.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you all so much for tuning in. We'll see you next time.
God bless.
Bye. And that was the second part of my conversation with Jonathan Anderson. I feel nervous doing this outro, guys, because I opened up a lot. And there were moments that, like, you know, listening to this recording, like, I felt kind of bad because I didn't want to take away from Jonathan. But if anything, I more than anything, just want to get across that me being this vulnerable is truly just a huge testament to him and everything that, you know, he literally shared on this episode. I've, like, always had a certain idea of how I wanted this podcast to go. I always knew I was going to interview comedians because, essentially, I do want to pursue comedy myself. And something that was always in the back of my mind is, like, I know these people are funny, but I want to get to know them outside of who they are on stage. Like, what made you who you are that you want to do this? It's a crazy career choice, and I have found a lot of peace with my pursuit of it, but I just get so curious to listen to other people's, like, pursuits on it. And if anything, I have found that a lot of these comedians that I have been able to talk to have inspired me to not only keep going, but to kind of just see that there's, like, light at the end of every chapter of whatever endeavor it is that you're pursuing. And I think this conversation with Jonathan just really helps kind of hone in on a lot of that stuff that I want you guys to hear. It's beautiful to me. But yeah, this episode meant a lot. And to have Jonathan on, I mean, I have been name dropping Jonathan since episode one. So he definitely inspires me. This was the episode that I just felt like, yeah, just coming out on. But I'm so thankful for these people. I'm super thankful for this episode with Jonathan. Thank you so much. You've been through a lot. I can only say great things about you. I have really, really learned a lot just from watching you perform and, you know, just kind of moving through this comedic space. There's so many things that you can do, and I'm really, really looking forward to all the things that you will continue to do in this crazy little career path that you have, yeah, just embarked on. But a quick little shout out to Jonathan and Madeline. Happy 3-year anniversary. You guys are awesome. Don't forget, Jonathan does have an upcoming show on December 20th. It's at Arts of the Armory, and it's his Show Me Your Bits show. He's got a lot of great people that are on this set, so please go check it out. Music was produced by Henry Loveland Nickerson. Character bits were done by Kelly Moon. Intro was done by Alex Damaro. Find out more places to find Jonathan, Kelly, Henry, and Alex in the description below. Thank you all so much for tuning in, and we'll see you next time on the Creative Ambitions Podcast.
She has so much work to do. 8 bits, please. Sorry.